You're listening to Compassion Radio. Hello, friends, and welcome to the report from the front lines of faith. Yesterday, we began a powerful conversation with Natasha Latour, a seemingly unlikely hero of the faith. On the face of it, her story seems implausible and sensational. And you'd be right. But as my grandfather was fond of saying when preaching about the miracles, signs, and wonders splattered all over the Word of God, it was an impossible situation. But then, God. Drop any Bible story in that mold, and that line fits, because God. So far in this account, Natasha has brought us to the moment when she faced imminent and certain death at the business end of a serial killer's gun. That she survived it is a miracle enough. But that wasn't the end of the story. Not even the end of the beginning. And many more twists to follow. We'll pick it up today where Natasha sums up this eternal moment and the launch point for a living faith in a living God who doesn't just love us, he actually shows up. Thanks for tuning our way today. And if you didn't hear yesterday's part one, just catch it in the podcast section of our website, CompassionRadio.com.
Let me rewind a little bit. When I pull into the train tracks, I'm going to smoke a cigarette, and I may or may not have plans to do drugs. I don't know, but I know that I have them in my pocket. And mind you, unbeknownst to me, this shooter had just killed somebody in Oakland about 2 hours before.
So he's probably raging on drugs himself, for all you know.
I have no idea, but this shooting, it's the third shooting, the second shooting of the same day, but just a few days earlier, he killed his first victim.
Wow.
So I am what makes it a serial killer, this shooting. I pulled in, Bram, and I put my bike down. I took my backpack off, and after I was shot, there was no time to pretend like you're dead. You know you're shot. You know, I crawled on my back, actually scooting with one leg, because when I was on my stomach, all I can feel was wetness.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Both my grandmothers are passed away. And like I told you, the first thing I heard was I pray for my children's children's children. Mm. And then I was instructed by these two voices. I never saw them. You know what your grandmother sounds like?
Yeah, I remember.
And it was like boot camp. It was like boot camp. You know, move, girl, move. And I remember telling my mom's mom, why? And she said, I'll tell you when you can rest. Move. And so I got to the street. I'm thinking, what am I here for? What did they get me to the street for? Because my grandmothers were no longer there with me. And I get to the street and I'm calling for help. I'm calling anybody and everybody. Yeah. Somebody please help. It's Tasha. I've been shot. I'm waving my arms around. Like I said, mid-pandemic, I'm on a one-way. There is one trauma center in the city of Stockton and it's 15 minutes away if you speed. And my phone, Bram, is in that backpack that I took off over there by that bike.
You're not going back to get that one at that point.
No, I used every bit of energy that I had to get to the street. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm going to get to these railroad tracks because I'd rather let this train hit me than to let this person come back and kill me. And God, I hope that somebody doesn't hit me and they think that they killed me because I was already shot. I didn't want a car to hit me. So I got to where, you know, when you have the railroad tracks, they're kind of up like this. And then there's like a little bit of a slope.
Right.
I got on top of that so I would be able to be seen. And I'm waving my arms and I'm saying, anybody, somebody, please help me. And it's all silent. It's all eerie, you know. And then I remember that I had that one last call and I'll just give it a shot. And I said, you know, God, I'm dying. I laugh now because I'm like he didn't know, you know what I mean? And then boom, here comes Jesus. I never saw him either. But when he appeared, his presence, I said, it's you. And he said, yes. And I said, will you please sit down here with me? And he said, yes. I told him I'm dying. Please don't let my mom find my body here. And then he got behind me and my body was laid back into his. And he put his arms around me. And at this point in time, I'm in so much excruciating pain because the adrenaline's gone. There's nothing else. It's just like now that you're soaking in, I could barely breathe. One of the bullets I found out later had been in my lung. There's blood coming out of my mouth. And when he put his arms around me, all the pain was gone.
Wow.
All the pain was gone. It was the last time I heard my grandmother's voice. She said, well done. It felt so good that I was hoping that I was going with him. Yeah. Wherever he was going. So next thing I know, there's two police officers there and then there's an ambulance there. And I'm thinking, I'm still alive and I'm with him and I have no pain. And I can't even describe this, but it was the most love that I've ever felt in my life. I knew who my father was at this point in time. I had no doubt. And everybody else was actually the crazy one because he came right here to me. And and I'm on drugs. I'm gay. And I didn't even know if he was going to come. And I said it as fast as I said it, God, I'm dying. I didn't beg for my life, nothing like that. I said, God, I'm dying. And then boom, he sends his son. And I'm like, what is going on here? I wake up in the hospital 4 days later. I wiggle my toes and I wiggle my fingers and I know I'm not paralyzed. And I said, if that happened and you happened, and where are you? Because you promised you'd never leave. And he says, I'm right here. And there he is by the hospital door. Again, I can't see him. And I said, do you do this for everybody? And I asked him that because I have a cousin that was shot one time. She passed away. I said, do you do this for everybody? And he said, yes. All they have to do is call me. And mind you, I had never read the Bible. I didn't know. And I said, you know, you promised not to leave. And he said, I'm not leaving. I'll never leave. I didn't know anything about I will never leave you, nor forsake you. I had known nothing about that. And I'm telling people in my family, and they're like, you know, they're throwing out the quotes. This is from there. This is from, I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. All I know is what he's talking about. You know what I mean? When I asked him, I said, will you do this for everybody? I said, will you do this for the person who did this to me? Mm. And he said, yes, I will. And I knew this individual had to do was call him too. So I also knew that I had to work on forgiveness, because whoever just tried to kill me, I'm going to probably see him in heaven if they call, you know.
You are definitely diving into deep theological waters at this point, but yeah. I am not in any way deep enough myself to give qualification or confirmation to any of those particular points. What I can say is that I understand that when you're talking with Jesus, it's the theology of showing up, that God showed up for you and that you felt
where I was.
Yeah, and that he has not left you or forsaken you. And therefore, it opens up a whole lot of new possibilities. If God can do this to this level with me, he can do this with anybody. And we wake up to the possibility of God doing things greater and far and above what we could possibly imagine, and even farther than our theology can imagine. And I'll just leave it there at that, because it's not my job to justify your experience with God or to qualify it at all.
Yeah.
So you're in the hospital now. You've had these quote unquote face-to-face discussions with the invisible but present imminent God.
Yes.
And Jesus is telling you, he's just reading his own words to you. He's saying, yeah, this is who I am. And you're hearing that, and it's resonating with your spirit. So you're in agreement. What came next?
What came next was just a world of physical pain. Mm-hmm. I was there for 11 days. A police officer never came to investigate the shooting. You know, I was a drug addict. You know, I was I was homeless. And so for 16 months, I tried to get physical therapy for my clavicle.
Yeah.
And that happened a year later. I no longer needed it, because when I went to go get it and made all these phone calls to get it, I couldn't get it for this reason or that reason as far as the doctors went. And so I said, Jesus, will you be my physical therapist? And he said, yes. And, you know, once you get your clavicle broken, they say it never goes back to normal, but mine is completely normal. And the doctors are like, I don't even know why it's like that. And I'm like, well, I do. That guy up there. I went to get mental help because I wanted to know if I was crazy. I think I'm talking to Jesus.
Right. And there are plenty of people that talk to spirits and claim they are God. And we've seen evidence of that, where things are destructive and violent and evil and are obviously not the fruit of the spirit. So there is definitely deception out there.
Yes. Well, I mean, and I'm thinking, okay, well, so my life is changing for the better, and all I'm doing is talking to one person, and I'm not doing anything that everybody else is saying, okay, you have to go do this, this, and this. So is there something up with me? Let me go try to get some mental help, because I was also just shot and maybe I have trauma. And I went down there and they told me that it wasn't a crisis. And so I left there crying and I had a cane, and I said, Jesus, will you be my therapist? And he said, yes, I will. So we went home from there. 16 months later, I'm at my job at Amazon. Because I got in a job too, and I got the teeth and everything came, you know, I'm at my job at Amazon. You know, there's a higher crime rate here in Stockton, a lot of homicides.
Yeah.
I don't know why these ones stuck out, but I was looking at the ones on the internet and I'm like, wow, what's going on here? And so I went to the bathroom, and now that I don't work there anymore, I can say it. I just took my phone out and I prayed. I said, God, is this the person? And he immediately said, yes. And you know what I want you to do? And I was upset. And you want me, a drug addict, you know, even though I'm sober, to go tell these people that this guy shot me and I have no proof. Just because you told me, just clear as day. He said, I didn't ask you to convince anybody, just tell the story. So I went to the police department and they never came out. And then so I went to 209 times, and it was a place that was an online presence.
Yeah.
And they were saying that there was a serial killer. The chief of police was saying there wasn't. The newspaper here was saying that there wasn't. And then you have me with no proof. So I called and I said, hey, these aren't new circumstances. This is the same guy that shot me. And he said, how do you know? I said, God told me. He said, we'll call you back. And so I started laughing. I said, okay. So he called me back in an hour and he said, we know that there's a homeless black drug addict that survived. And I said, well, and I need you to keep calling me that, because I need every homeless drug addict to know when you call that he comes and he changes your whole life around.
That is the big he. Yes.
Yes. Yes. Then it became to where it was like, you know, you got People Magazine and Dateline and everybody wants to get a hold of you and hear this story. And you know, Abraham, I don't have this big, bloody, gory story. I just have the story of God's grace and his mercy.
Well, I do hear blood and guts and gore in the seed of that story. But what you're saying is that what I hear is the whole biblical image of the blood that washes us as white as snow, and that his blood was shed for you, and it covers even this multitude of sins committed against you on your body, and by extension on Jesus himself. Jesus is coming to you when he's been wounded with you.
Let me tell you something. I had a very difficult time in the beginning trying to describe what happened because I would get so emotional.
Yeah, I bet.
I would find myself walking and looking for some place to cry because of where I was no longer in life. And when he put his arms around me, Bram, and basically bleeding to death, he began to shake and tremble. It blew my mind because I thought to myself, I knew that he took this pain for me. He took all the shots for me, and I'm no longer hurting.
Yeah,
You know
very
what I mean?
much.
And that's when I knew who my father was. This love was so amazing that when I woke up in the hospital, like, wait a minute, what we're supposed to be going together here. And
Yeah.
he said, no, I'm preparing you for something. To think he would meet me in the middle of the street. It wasn't a nice neighborhood. There's no beautiful churches around. And I'm on drugs. I'm gay. I'm homeless. And I called and he came and he came for me and he came for me instantly. And then he took all the pain for me. And then he got me sober. All these beautiful things. And then later on, I would be doing something for him when he said, okay, well, I want you to tell them your story. Okay, well, I feel like I'm going to sound crazy telling that story. And he said, well, I
Yeah.
didn't ask you to convince anybody. Just go tell the story.
So you told also the story that it has been confirmed in your spirit that the person identified in the paper is the one who actually committed the crime against you. So
Yes.
you were willing to be brave about that. That's where we left off that little sidebar.
Yeah.
Move on from there if you would. What happened when the rest of the world came rushing to hear your story? What happened with the issue of the evidence about this murder?
So from there, obviously, before I did the interview, because he was still free, by the time that we knew that there was a serial killer, after me, there were five deaths. There were five more people that died. There was a 16-month break after me, and then he just went for it.
Again.
And so when I came through and said that I was the one that survived, because the police had never gotten a hold of me and told me any information like that, even though they knew, I was living in the same building at that point in time for a year. I had the same phone number for a year, well, 16 months. So they just had never reached out. It became real. And when it became
Yeah.
real and people knew, okay, this really happened, the ballistics matched. The reward money rose higher than Ted Bundy. It was actually $125,000. And he was caught within 2 weeks. The individual was caught with the same weapon that shot us all. And his phone was pinging off every location.
So it was proven.
I mean, we still go to court once a month for about 15 minutes. Now we're waiting to see if he's fit to stand trial. But the evidence is there. The state's confident with the evidence. We're just waiting for justice to be served on that level.
Why do you think it's important, Natasha, that you were obedient to the particular urging of the Spirit to say, go tell your story to the police, the ones you've already acknowledged you didn't have any reason to trust and apparently have a bit of a integrity problem in that town?
Yeah, I think it was important to tell the story because, people needed to understand that it was true and he was killing people. And without a live person, maybe they wouldn't believe it because nobody wants to have a serial killer in their town. But more so because the story needs to reach people that don't think that they can be reached, the people that felt how I felt. And I think we can all agree that God sees our sins from above, right?
That's a way of putting it. Yeah.
Yeah, there are people that think that, okay, well, she was a drug addict, but not that much of one. She still has her teeth. Or, she wasn't as far as I was off. And that's why God came for her. It's just important just to know you don't have to take it from me. All I know is if you try it, then it works out amazingly well. If you just try
Yeah.
it.
Yeah. Whether or not we ever hear the story on the other side of it, I do and am firmly convinced of that reality that calling upon the Lord Jesus Christ has real power. I really do believe that, and I've seen it in my own life too.
Yeah.
But it is not essential, as you said, that we convince anybody. It's essential that we obey.
Yes.
And if God's intention was to stop this murderer, maybe the
Yes.
murderer himself is calling out in his distress, sometimes saying, God, you're going to have to stop me because I can't.
Yes.
Maybe a prayer like that goes up. We have no idea.
Yeah, we have no idea.
And whatever the story going on between that person as a human being and the God who made him is not for us to intercess for them or against them or intersect it with our own life to make judgments.
Exactly.
But it is important that we have our own story and our own relationship, and because of that, we can act. And God makes it possible for us to do right by Him because He loves us enough to make it possible. I do
Yes.
believe that is humanly possible for everybody who's ever existed.
Yes.
And you, like I said at the beginning of this program, you are Exhibit A at this one today.
Oh,
So,
thank
and of
you.
course, you're crossing over all the other third rails too about what it means to be a worthy follower of Christ. Nothing about your story, Natasha, tells me that you are trying to position yourself as somebody who is a thought leader in these things or wants to teach people how to do this, that, or the other.
Yes.
You have literally started your story about you being turned out on the street because you were bringing bread to those you loved. And that was too fearful for them at that point because of all the other fears in life that crowded it out. You were bringing bread, and the bread of life comes to you later in the story and brings you back from the very edge physically. But I'm sensing too that God's commitment to you and the prayers he answered on your mother's and your grandmother's behalf, that he would never leave or forsake those children, you.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It's hard for me not to get emotional because of the fact that I know that to be true.
Yeah.
So when we fast forward 2 years from that point, I'm doing all the things you're supposed to do. I'm 50 years old. I'm going to go get a colonoscopy.
Yeah,
And
there you go. Before we jump to this next chapter, I need to make that segue. We're now going to talk about the one who was saved, the one who was redeemed, the one who has the power testimony of God in the middle of the greatest evil you can imagine showing up and being present for you.
yeah.
Then everything's supposed to resolve itself. Everything's supposed to be great. You're supposed to have done everything a human being could possibly do
Right.
and enjoy the rewards of being a faithful follower of Christ, right?
Yes.
Well, in your case, you stepped into the next chapter of something that is the commonality that so many millions face, and that's cancer. So please unpack it your way. But I just want people to understand that suffering doesn't necessarily end because one suffering ended.
Yes.
You are
Yes.
facing some real challenges here now. So tell that story, if you'd be so kind.
Yeah, we are not immune no matter what we go through. But to think that I would hear that I would be diagnosed with stage 3A colon cancer without God would be a horrible situation, or
Yeah.
on drugs would be a horrible situation. So I found out that I had cancer. My colonoscopy was in June, so in July. And then I had surgery after that. And then I started doing the chemo in October. So I'm currently in my fifth round of chemo.
Wow.
And actually, I had to go in there 2 weeks ago and I asked him, Bram, hey, is this stuff working? Because my hair is getting thicker and curlier. And I don't know what's. And they said, yes, it is, whatever. But you know, I'm not the only person that's ever prayed for this to go away. I'm not the only person that's ever said, Lord, please, not this. And you know, when I'm thinking, you know, well, why me? I've already been through all this other stuff. It became very clear to me, like they say, like, you know, well, why not me? I'm in a position to where a lot of people can hear my story and then listen and then realize that number one, they should go get a colonoscopy.
There you go.
My oncologist would agree with me that you should actually lie and say there's blood in your stool so you can get a colonoscopy because they may not give it to you.
Wow.
And that screening does not
Yeah.
provide the information that they need. It doesn't show
Right.
if there's a polyp or not. And I'm doing something that's a little bit risky because I'm willing to say, watch God bring me through this because he said he was going to. And I'm saying that publicly. So kind of like, you know, if you're on a sports team and you're like, oh, we're going to win, just watch us win. And then you lose, that can happen. But at the same time, I just don't see how I can lose because he's with me. What's the loss if we're not supposed to be here? What do you lose when you know you're going home with him? And I
Right.
know how that feels when I was in his arms. So, I mean, that's not a
Right.
scary feeling.
No, it's not. And the scripture that comes to mind for me is simply that story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego standing up to King Nebuchadnezzar and saying, "We will not bow down to your idol. The God who made it all can save us from the fiery furnace. There's nothing we are afraid of on this thing. But
Yeah.
even if he does it, we will not bow down." I mean,
Yes.
it's the confidence of the character of God more than God's methods or his plan or his agenda.
Yeah.
Because you're confident of the person of Jesus. I mean, you're absolutely convinced beyond a shadow of a doubt that the Word became flesh and dwelt among us and is dwelt right there with you is now.
Yeah, I've seen what he's done.
Yeah.
He came in and he transformed me like a Rubik's cube and set me aside and go, there, now you're solid.
Yeah.
So the cancer was just like, I was like, okay, so you're going to let me be not only a survivor, but a warrior? Okay, let's do it. It does. This chemotherapy for me is nowhere near what I expected from the movies.
Yeah.
You think you're going to be crawling? I mean, and some people are. I felt this weird sense of strength when I heard that I had it. I thought to myself, well, thank God it's not my sister because she has kids. I don't have any kids. My mom, I was like, you know, please be present in her life because she's kind of sick of me. She's like, you know, come on, like, you know, first the shooting, you know, and now the cancer. I remember thinking also, Bram, it was last week I was not able to get my chemotherapy because I had pneumonia and the flu. I was in the hospital for 2 days.
Right.
And I was like, you know, man, you know, I want this to just let it play out because your body goes through different things with it. You're tired. You're sensitive to water, just all kinds of crazy things. And I'm halfway through it. When I was unable to get it, I was like, wow. So you're telling me I have 2 more weeks. It's just a stretch, And meanwhile, I figured, hey, you know what? Why not share it? Because you know what, Bram? Because of the serial killer situation, it's not really mine. I knew that from the beginning anyway. I had to go and tell them, hey, I've got third stage cancer. The pretrial has not happened yet. So regardless, I mean, even if I had no hair at all, you have to go do this. Life is going to happen still.
Yeah.
I may as well include people and encourage them, inspire them to go ahead and get their colonoscopy. And while you do, have a conversation with God, whoever it is you see him.
When you're going through chemo now, you're in a place where people say, well, I can relate to that. I've had cancer. I've even had colon cancer. I've survived it. Or I lost somebody who had it. I mean, you have lots of touch points now where you have commonalities. I actually lost my grandfather to it, but it was years and years ago where the advances that are actually available to you now are not anywhere close to what he had at the time.
Yeah.
But he did die fairly young. So yes, I'm getting checked every year like clockwork.
Good.
But you have the ability now to step into people's lives and say, besides my outrageously crazy story, which is something you ought to hear sometime, what you're going through right now is, I get it. I get what you're going through. And they can say the same to you. You have actually, you have a whole new community of people that get you. And that you get them. So God seems to be expanding your tent literally in that way. Because you can walk into places where the chemo is going on and say, I know how to be with these people. I know how to be a friend. I know how to help you believe and have faith for things that God's doing. The joy of the Lord has been my strength. It is now.
Yeah.
So let me hear your story and be part of it. And suddenly you are in a place of not just authority, but of ministry to people.
Yeah.
Who are scared to death.
Yes. Yeah. It's a scary situation. The thing I'm learning from this whole cancer thing is, the chemotherapy, our reactions are really, truly are so different.
Yeah.
And I was over there preparing for my hair to go. My hair may still go. I mean, I had to cut my hair off just because I couldn't lift my arm from the shooting. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so then to have it, getting back. And then every time I got ready to let it grow, I'd have to go to court and I didn't want to go shabby. So I, and now I'm like, I've been wanting my hair back. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I was like, I'm just going to let it grow. And if it falls out, then it falls out and it comes back, then so be it. But it's interesting because I was in there the other day in the oncology, and there's three of us in there, and the nurse leaves. I look over to the left, look over to the right, very dramatic. This girl is over to the side. I said, hey, psst. And she looks at me and she goes, me? And I go, yeah, what are you in for? We're all there.
Exactly.
She started laughing. She goes, cancer. And I go, yeah, me too. You know what I mean? And she starts laughing. And I said, this is going to pass. And she goes, I know. And so we're able to laugh. It is kind of weird because, I'm in the same city where I survived the serial killer. But I think when they see me and they realize, okay, well, she went through that with God and she's going through this with God. And it still happened, even though God is with her. Like, you're not exempt.
Right.
Life is still going to happen to you. And I would rather have all this stuff happening with him than without him.
There's more of Natasha Latour's amazing story coming up tomorrow.
Christ in me. Christ in me.
We're just getting started with this incredible interview with our special guest, Natasha Latour. I hope you'll tune in tomorrow for the next important segment in the series. And if you missed anything today, just find the podcast streaming at our website, CompassionRadio.com.
Our toll-free number is 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is P.O. Box 77160, Corona, California, 92877. We'll see you tomorrow.